Overlooking the waters of Lake Ontario is a captivating mansion, rich with history and rife with spirits. Sightings of a man and a woman who appear in formal wedding attire. Sounds of a woman singing and a giggling child. Visions of shadow creatures roaming the grounds. In today's episode, we'll look at the Harding Waterfront Estate and the spirits that haunt the grounds. Welcome to today's episode of The Cabinet of Dr. Mystery. I am your host, Dr. Mystery.
Did you know I'm utterly insane?
Reports that have been made by credible observers of relatively incredible things.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
I am the devil, and I am here to do the devil's work.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
So I've been thinking about ghosts a lot. Spooky season. There's ghosts everywhere. Ghosts on pumpkins. Ghosts on cookies. Ghosts everywhere. So I was thinking about, what does the word ghost actually mean? Well, the origins of the word ghost are derived from the old English word ghast, which means breath or spirit. Turns out there are literally hundreds of haunted locations around Canada. The location that I found the most interesting was a location in Ontario, in Mississauga. It is now called the Harding Waterfront House. The Harding Waterfront House was built in 1937 by Charles Bell. It was originally named the Bell Estate. After Charles Bell died in 1938, James Gardiner married his widow, and they moved into the property on the lakeshore, renaming it Gairloch. Gairloch is a Gaelic word meaning short lake. Now, as I referenced before, this mansion overlooks the waters of Lake Ontario, and it's bordered by Josh's Creek. Excuse me, I mean Joshua's Creek. I don't know Josh very well. I guess I should refer to him as his formal full name, Joshua's Creek. During this period, many people referred to the estate or the house as the Bell Gardiner Estate. In 1961, the estate was sold to Ontario Hydro and was used for Ontario Hydro Canadian Fusion Fuels Project. So at this point, the property was renamed as the Fusion Project, or Fusion Grounds, Fusion Estate. The place has gone through quite a few names. Most recently, with the renaming, they named it the Harding Waterfront House, after Catherine Harding, the wife of Charles Bell. Excuse me, Kathleen, not Catherine. I apologize. Kathleen Harding. I figured that this estate would be a great bonus episode for everyone. I thought that this property, being well known for all the spirits on the grounds, would be a great subject to cover. On the grounds, several spirits have been reported, including that of a man and a woman who appear in formal wedding attire. Several independent sightings place the mysterious couple at various places around the property. Before we dive in here, I just wanted to explain a little bit about EVPs. EVPs are electronic voice phenomenons. So we're discussing ghost hunting today. And along with ghost hunting and parapsychology, electronic voice phenomena are sounds that are found on electronic recordings that are interpreted as spirit voices that have been either unintentionally recorded or intentionally requested and recorded. Throughout the book that we're about to talk about, Richard does discuss EVPs multiple times. So EVPs are electronic voice phenomena from spirits. In today's episode, we used various sources in our research, but our main source today is Ghosts, an investigation into a true Canadian haunting by Richard Palmisano. Richard Palmisano is a member of the Searcher Group. The Searcher Group is a team of paranormal investigators from Ontario, which were formed in 1979. The Searcher Group is also affiliated with the Canadian Institute of Parapsychology. This group has done several paranormal investigations all throughout Canada. I will state that I do give some credence to clairvoyants and mediums and psychics. I believe that they have their place in every paranormal investigation. I believe that there are some psychics who are incredibly psychic, who can contact spirits, who can hear spirits, who can see spirits. But I believe that there are also a lot of con men, a lot of hacks, a lot of people who prey on individuals who have lost family members, parents who've lost children. I think there's more hacks and con men in the psychic and clairvoyant field than there are not, to put it bluntly. Throughout this book, the searcher group had a clairvoyant or a psychic. Occasionally they had different clairvoyants, different psychics. And not to say that they are not reputable people, not to say that they're not actually experiencing these things. I would just say more for our purposes, more for having actual physical evidence and actual tangible evidence, as opposed to somebody saying that something's happening. I would say that that's what I'm focusing on here in today's topics. I'm not trying to discredit any psychics or any clairvoyants, but anybody can say that there's somebody in the room. I could be standing in the room with someone else and just randomly shout out, "Oh no, Michael Jackson is behind you and he's touching his penis. Oh no. Oh no, he's touching your hair with his penis. Oh, Michael, please stop. Don't finish there. Oh." Right? You know, anybody could stand in a room and say that Tupac is standing behind you and he's giving you the finger, right? So I think, in my own personal opinion, even though I believe in psychic abilities and clairvoyance and I find them really interesting and fascinating, I would like to focus on actual physical manifestations and actual visitations and actual sightings rather than psychic visions and such. When this investigation was conducted, the property was still operating under the name Fusion, or Fusion Estates, or Fusion Grounds. The investigation that the search group conducted was over a 3-year period. They used over 640 hours of tape, and they captured an astounding 391 EVPs, or electronic voice phenomenon. They discovered there was communication between the spirits on the grounds on a constant basis, doing chores, taking orders, playing, flirting, even bouts of anger, and shouting. One thing that I found really interesting was, before they even really began the investigation, while they were initially exploring the property, Richard hears Paul, another team member, call out to him, and as he goes towards the sound of Paul's voice, he sees a figure in all black, whom he assumes is Paul, but as Richard gets closer, he realizes it's not Paul, because Paul is standing on the other side of the dark shadow figure. But what Paul saw, he didn't see a figure cloaked in black. Instead, he saw what he described as an all-white, luminescent figure of a person. After reviewing the property some more, they came across a broken back door. As their party was about to depart for the evening, Richard saw someone staring at them from a window on the second floor. And when he told everyone, the figure moved back out of sight. After another moment, a hand appeared, pulling back the blinds, and a head and a shoulder came into view. It jumped back again, with the blinds swaying. They went into the property, believing there was an intruder, where they had found the window the figure had been staring out of. It was positioned 3 meters, or 9 feet, above a staircase, just open air, and there was no way anyone could have gotten up that high. So they saw a figure from outside on the grounds. They saw a figure in the second story window, and they went inside to investigate. And there's 9 feet between the staircase and the window, just empty space, open air. That means that somebody was either descending from the ceiling on a rope, or someone was floating, right? I don't see any other explanation besides that. If you look at, I'll see if I can find a photograph of it, and I'll post on the socials. But the image in the book that he has here is that there is a large gap about 9 feet or 3 meters above the staircase. And even if someone was standing on the banister of the stairwell, they still wouldn't be able to reach up that high. So I'm really baffled by that alone. Throughout exploring the grounds, multiple sightings by different team members occurred. These team members saw either bright luminescent figures or dark shadows. I'm not sure which is more terrifying. A bright angelic luminescent light figure walking towards you, or a dark black shadow scurrying about. It's fucking terrifying. To be honest, that's terrifying. You're just walking around and you heard that this place is haunted and you see shadow figures scurrying about, but the other person on the opposite side sees a luminescent figure. Terrifying. So obviously, this being a massive mansion and expensive grounds, there's a lot of property, there's a lot of ground to cover. So naturally, they would hire a groundskeeper. Some groundskeepers that were interviewed reported seeing multiple shadow figures walking through fog on cloudy nights. One groundskeeper was able to pinpoint one specific incident where he saw the fog swirl around the shadow figures, meaning they have somewhat of a physical presence if they're able to, you know, affect that sort of change in the environment, right? One of the groundskeepers was quoted as saying, "I came to the back steps of the house and looked out over the property to the lake, and something caught my eye. It looked like two people were down by or in the water. I climbed a few stairs to get a better look, and it was two people, a man and a young woman, and they were wearing wedding attire, old-fashioned wedding attire. She had on a wedding dress with a veil and train, and he wore a black top hat and tails, a high wide collar and a bow tie. They were arm in arm. It was a very strange sight. I looked to my left and saw Joe, another groundskeeper, sitting on his mower, stopped, watching the couple as well. I looked back at them, and as a breeze came up off the lake, the couple seemed to disintegrate, vanishing in the wind. Joe yelled to me, 'We are going.' I hurried back to the truck, loaded our equipment, and left. It took me some time to realize that I must have just seen two ghosts." In addition to the groundskeepers, several security guards have also spotted dark shadow-like figures throughout the inside and among the grounds of the estate. Several security guards gave eyewitness accounts of spotting luminescent and shadow-like figures all throughout the grounds. Throughout the investigation, it seemed as though the spirits in the house were very concerned or even afraid of the investigative team. At one point, when one of the members called out to the others to tell them where they were going, for example, "We are going upstairs," an unknown male voice would yell out in a panic, "They're coming up, they're coming up," or they would angrily shout, "Get out," or "Leave this house." At one point, two black shadows peeled themselves off the stairwell banister and blurred past the camera, going into the room at the top of the stairs adjacent to the camera. It seems like all the spirits are genuinely concerned about the individuals from the searcher group that are on the property. At one point, a man is heard calling out for a boy, "Danny, Danny boy, Danny boy," and ordering Danny to come here and get back. At one point while investigating, the crew was joined by an additional film crew. While investigating with this additional crew, one of their members fell ill. They took him to the van, gave him a blanket, told him to sleep it off. They would come back when they were done their work and they would help him out. While he was sleeping in the van, tiny handprints appeared on the van's passenger window, as if a child had stood there leaning in on the window, looking at Scott, the film member, sleeping. This was witnessed by the whole team, not by Scott himself. The handprints were small, only 10 centimeters from the tip of the middle finger to the end of the palm, and the handprints were way too small to belong to anyone present that night. Now, in addition to this, there was also multiple sightings of handprints in the dust around one of the homes. And they spoke to the owner of the property. At this point, it was still being called the Fusion Estate because it was still owned by Ontario Hydro when this investigation was being conducted. The owners, the members from Ontario Hydro, said there would not have been a child present in any of these properties for multiple years. So I thought that was something significant, that there is some sort of reference to a child with this person calling out for Danny and trying to protect Danny and Danny Boy. And with the addition of these handprints appearing on the windows and handprints appearing in dust. Throughout the investigation, year after year, one thing remained very, very common, and that was technical difficulties. The film crew that joined them on one of their excursions faced technical difficulties with their lighting, with their camera gear, and sometimes what would happen is the lighting would go out, and they would see something move past them, and the lighting would come back on when they would see it leave. At one point, there was a security system, and the whole security system was connected up to one of the houses. There was an incident where security had seen the fuse box for the security system completely melt. It wasn't a high electricity fuse box. It was a low level fuse box, and there was no way that the electricity conducted through that fuse box could have actually melted the fuse box into the puddle of goop, as it was described in the book. We briefly discussed the spirits and how they seemed to have wanted to get rid of these individuals, or at least they were wary of or somewhat concerned with their presence. But there were a few incidents where there were actual physical manifestations. One incident that I found that was very, very frightening, that actually really got to me, was when I was smoking an enormous amount of weed. I was sitting in the backyard, and I was reading this book as I was smoking, and it was pitch black, and there was no one else around. I was utterly terrified as I was reading this. There was an incident where they were all investigating on the grounds together. All the team members were all together, witnessed one of the female team members being pushed and kicked from behind. They actually witnessed her being physically hurt by these spirits. And what happened to her is, as they were all standing there, she was standing there and you could visibly see her leg being kicked out from underneath her. Afterwards, when they regrouped, they looked at her leg and she had a visible deep purple bruise on her calf. I briefly touched on the EVPs that they would experience, some of the EVPs that they would pick up, but throughout their investigation, they would occasionally pick up warnings from the spirits to get out and get out of this house or I will, and then it would trail off. There was also sounds of a woman screaming throughout. So even though we saw the singing and the giggling and we saw one spirit looking after the other spirit, Danny Boy, come here, or warnings to get out, where as they go deeper and deeper into their investigation, they're starting to see that the spirits in this house really do not want them there, or at the very least, they are seriously concerned about the people that are in their house. One of the team members, Paul, was working on the EVP and audio equipment when he heard the phrase, "Paul, Paul, death." That's terrifying, right? We spoke about all these different manifestations, all these different EVPs that these spirits are conveying to these people that are either intentionally or unintentionally recorded. But here we're seeing that there's actually a spirit speaking out to one person in specific and warning him of imminent death or imminent danger. Now the question here is, was the spirit warning Paul? Was the spirit threatening Paul? Was it telling Paul that there's something in the home, in the estate, something on the grounds that will harm him or kill him? Or was it warning Paul he has an illness that's terminal? Or was it warning Paul that something in the future is going to happen and he's going to end up dead, right? Now, I feel like this is very ominous. I feel like it's very personal and very purposeful. But at the same time, I'm very, very curious as to what the spirit was conveying. Was it something in the home? Is it something to do with his body? Or is it something to do with someone else committing an act on him that causes his death? It's very interesting. As far as I know, Paul is still alive. So I believe that it was just a warning. If you keep messing around in this house, you are going to die. But that's just my speculation. As I said before, on occasion they had a film crew working with them. This quote is from Jason Perez, one of the film crew members. "We were walking around the mansion and you could hear everyone around you, their equipment and the leaves crackling underfoot. And then all the sound stopped. I thought I had gone deaf because we were still moving, but there wasn't a sound, not even the leaves under our feet. It was like we had entered a dead zone. Then, all of a sudden, the sounds came back. No one could explain it." I will admit, as strange and spooky as these stories and quotes and eyewitness accounts are, the book faded into speculation in the later chapters. The use of clairvoyance and mediums, I felt, heavily influenced the opinion of the writer and the crew. I'm not trying to discredit anyone. I'm not trying to say that this book isn't a good read. I really enjoyed this book. All I'm saying is that there are a lot of eyewitness accounts, a lot of physical evidence. There is a lot of history in this that you could probably research, and you could probably find a lot of these instances are accurate. A lot of the references to people that the clairvoyants make, a lot of references to historical events that the mediums interpret or the medium see, I think there's a lot of credibility to them. I just don't think it's necessary with all the physical evidence that we have. You know, I could sit here and I could discuss the different instances, the different conversations that the mediums have with the spirits, but I really don't think it's necessary to convey how haunted this place actually is. I will state that what the mediums in this book have to say seems relevant to the surrounding history of the estate. I will say that these mediums and these clairvoyants do seem like they're very credible people, they're very respectful, and it seems like they do have a good understanding of the spirits that walk around on these grounds. If you're interested in psychic abilities, if you're interested in mediums, and you're interested in seeing how they interact with a haunted mansion or with spirits, then this would definitely be a good read for you. And I would say you should definitely pick up this book and read a little bit more surrounding the mediums and the clairvoyance. However, for me, I felt like it was a lot of speculation. And these mediums and clairvoyants could have even researched the history surrounding the estate and knew some of the names that they had discovered. Or they could have been influenced by the people who had heard these things on the EVPs and stated these names or stated these occasions or the occurrences or the times that they saw them. But I don't believe that the clairvoyants and the mediums are relevant for today's conversation, simply because there's an abundance of physical evidence and eyewitness accounts of manifestations of spirits on the grounds. I don't think it's necessary to figure out the history behind each spirit. I think that is more than enough to see the actual evidence that there is a spirit there. That being said, I really did enjoy this book. It was a great read with plenty of frightening eyewitness accounts. Now, I have to include this one quote in here because I thought it was just absolutely hilarious. There were a few silly bits in this book, a few things where I thought that is not the least bit scary, that is actually something that I would see in a comedy book, or something that you would see in a comedy film. One quote that I found really funny: "We recovered a very disturbing recording of a young woman. She did something I had never heard a spirit do before. She went, 'Ooh.' This turned my blood cold, as it told me she must have known she was dead and seemed intent in trying to scare us." That was my best woo. That instantly reminded me of Beetlejuice. You know, the scene in Beetlejuice where they discover that they're dead and they need to scare off the new inhabitants of their home, where the couple that just died, they put on bed sheets and they cut out eye holes in order to scare Winona Ryder and her parents that live there. And in that scene, it's really funny because they literally just have bed sheets over their themselves, and they're walking around the house trying to scare the parents. Ooh. And they're in these bed sheets and they're shaking and And that's instantly what I thought of first, is this is not frightening at all. That's something I would see in Beetlejuice. That would something I would see in a comedy film. So I thought there's a few little silly bits like that in this book where they don't really add any credibility. But, you know, that idea of a spirit knowing that they're dead, that idea of a spirit intentionally trying to frighten someone so that they will leave them alone or leave the property, I think that is kind of frightening. The fact that the spirit actually knows that they're dead and they're intending on frightening you, I think that's kind of frightening. But I think that it's absolutely absurd to think that the best that a spirit could do would be to put on a bed sheet or to woo you out of the property. I think that's kind of silly. I mean, if I were a spirit, I would definitely be doing what they do later on in the movie in Beetlejuice. You know, the woman pulls her face back and they pop their eyes out and they're holding their eyes in their hands, right? It's a great scene. If you haven't seen it, I'll definitely post it on the socials, at least a picture of what they look like. But if you haven't seen Beetlejuice, you should watch Beetlejuice just for the simple fact of, you know, knowing how ridiculous it is to have to think about a ghost wooing you and frightening you that way with a woo and chasing you down the hallway. I think that's absolutely hilarious. While we're on the topic of spooky ghost stories, I wanted to share something with you that I might share again in the future. It's something that I haven't really shared with a lot of people, but it's always a very interesting story, and I really enjoy sharing it with people, even though I don't share it very often. I may share this again in the future if we ever cover apparitions or, you know, satanic visions or Satanism or anything like that. But I really think that it could apply here, and I think that it's a fun story to tell around Halloween. So the story is that it's actually not my story. It's my mother's. But if you ask her, she'll tell you it never happened. I have brought it up in recent years just to have her tell me that she doesn't remember saying that, or she doesn't remember this event actually happening. But I remember when I was really young, probably 6 years old maybe, she was a young girl. She was sitting on her bed when she saw something appear at the foot of her bed. This bright light appeared at the foot of her bed. So bright she couldn't even look at it. She couldn't stand to look at it. And as the light faded, as the light dimmed, she looked through her fingers. She saw this beautiful, tall, majestic, angelic angel, glowing with the most beautiful white feathery wings, the most beautiful angel she had ever seen in her whole life, the most beautiful thing that she had ever seen. And it was standing at the foot of her bed. And as she looked at it, she just stared at it for a moment. And as she looked at it, it beckoned her to come closer. So she got on her hands and knees, crawling along the bed, slowly, 1 foot, one hand at a time. And as she got closer, every time she got a little closer, the angel would change. And the closer she got, the more it morphed. And as she got closer to the foot of the bed, the beautiful, majestic angel, its wings started crumbling away, leaving a leathery black texture behind. Its halo started morphing, connecting to its head, turning into horns. The angel turned from a bright, angelic white into a dark, gruesome, crimson red. Just as she got close to the demon, she started to scream. She started to scream and scream and scream uncontrollably, and then, in a big flash of fire and lightning, the demon, it imploded into a ball of energy, vanishing without a trace. That right there is probably the spookiest thing that I have ever heard. I'm really hoping that through my research for these episodes that I will come across something that's even more terrifying than that. But I have yet to find anything to beat that story from my mother when she told me when I was a young boy about this angelic morphing demon angel. That's everything I got for today. But there are hundreds of haunted locations all throughout Canada, from Nova Scotia's haunted burning schooner in Mahone Bay to Saskatchewan's haunted mental hospital in Weyburn. Whether or not you believe any of the tales I've told you today, you have to give some credence to the fact that, other than my mother's story about the demon, these accounts have multiple witnesses who see the same spirits. That, to me, that's terrifying. That is fucking terrifying. And that's the one thing that I really, really look for in all of these, is that connection. How many people have seen this? How many times has this apparition, these spirits, these tulpas, these cryptids, how many times have these been seen by multiple people all over the world, in different parts of the country, in different parts of the province? It's astounding to me that these apparitions are seen by multiple people, and that is what truly solidifies their presence for me. This episode is produced by Death Hotel Creative, hosted by myself, Dr. Mystery. To view more, visit us at notwhatwesay.com or check out our Instagram handle at Cabinet of Mystery. Please leave us a review if you enjoyed the show and let us know what topics you'd like to hear in the future. You can let us know either on the socials or at cabinetofmystery@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and please subscribe for more episodes.